We know love by this, that he laid down his life for us. And we ought to lay down our lives for one another. How does God's love abide in anyone who has the world's goods and sees a brother or sister in need and yet refuses help? Little children, let us love not in word or speech, but in truth and action. Keith had a great Max Licata quote there just a few moments ago that talked about, you know, what do you do when you know that the end is coming, or at the end of your life, what will you think about? Well, you won't think about all the other stuff that you have. You think about relationships. And it's a great way to kind of lead into this keeping the main thing the main thing, because about 3 or 4 weeks ago, that's what I started on this series of messages, is keeping the main thing the main thing, based on the passage of Scripture out of 1 Peter 4:7-11, which I won't go to now, in which Peter was inviting his congregation and all the ones that would follow to keep the main thing the main thing. He said the end is near. That's how that passage starts out. Kind of the same thing that Keith was sharing in his Max Licata quote. The end is near. You know time is short. So here's what you need to do. And then, of course, Peter focused on four very simple practices: prayer, serving, welcoming, and loving. And I've actually put in our bulletin this morning on the right-hand side under the thoughts for reflection what each of these might look like if we saw each of these as offering a presence. What if we as a faith community and individually were to make God present in our world through the following ways? As a prayerful presence, we would attend to how God is guiding and directing us in our everyday activities. As a serving presence, we would humbly show up each day, willing to serve others through our gifts and abilities, not just here, but everywhere in the world. As a welcoming presence, we offer a non-judgmental space to others, and we live inclusively. We welcome everybody into our space. And then this morning, as a loving presence, we love others as God has loved us through acts of creative goodness. Now, in this passage, I'm going to go back to the passage from 1 Peter for a few moments. In this passage from 1 Peter, here's how he describes his words on love. Most important of all, he writes, continue to show deep love for each other, for love covers a multitude of sins. And when I read that again this past week, I noticed how love is always, for at least Paul and Peter, labeled as the most important, as the greatest gift, as the one quality that matters the most. And yet, maybe in our own minds, our own everyday world, it's almost as if we're unable to trust in the power of love. We would trust rather in the power and leave out the love. For in power, we hold control over someone else, but yet in love, we give up power. And the only power at that point is this power of vulnerability and the power of transformation through faithful love. So Peter describes this power of love. He says it covers a multitude of sins. The word multitude means multiply. It means a large number. It means abundance. Put it this way, love covers it all, both personally and for others. That's a huge statement to make, because Peter and Paul and all the others, and Jesus included, are really saying when it gets right down to it, what matters the most is love. Not sentimental, Hallmark kind of love, but real get down into the muck and mess of life kind of love. A few years ago, I tracked down a former professor of mine. I graduated from Taylor University, and I left my senior year. I graduated in 4.5 years, but the reason I left my senior year was I took my first church second semester as a senior. And there was a professor there that was, bar none, one of my greatest mentors. In fact, it was one of those moments where if the only reason I went to this school was for this professor, that was worth it. When I went back my second semester, my senior year, to see some friends, I found out his life had completely unraveled. Within a span of about a couple months, his marriage had unraveled. He was in the process of getting a divorce. It was ugly. It was embarrassing. There was, quite honestly, there was betrayal. He had been betrayed, and there was scandal all over the school, and the president had resigned immediately, and he was out the door. You kind of get the picture. So about a year later, I found out that he was working at a drug rehab center in Indianapolis. About a couple years later, I thought, I'm going to track him down. I really want to spend some time with him. I never got to say goodbye to him when I went back at second semester. So I tracked him down, and he welcomed me, and we went back to his office. And all I remember was it just seemed like all the lights were dim, all the lights were low. I could tell this man's in a very dark place. We had one little lamp on in the corner, no windows in this office. And we talked and we shared. He asked how I was doing and asked how he was doing. I didn't know how to get into it. And he paused, and I'll never forget this. He just said to me, in one of those moments where your mentor confides in you, he says, I never really knew until now what the disciple Peter meant when he wrote, love covers a multitude of sins. And I knew then he was trying to figure out, how am I going to love through this? How am I going to keep my heart from becoming bitter and angry for the rest of my life? What I heard him saying was, how am I going to save my soul? Because if I don't, this could go really, really bad. So in that moment, he took this sanitized love and he plunged it deep into this muck and mess of life, into his pain, into his anger, into his disappointment. He took love, or at least he found himself attempting to do so. He took love, and like one big covering, he found himself trying to cover up all the ugliness and pain he had been through. As Peter says, this love will cover a multitude of sins. And it's usually at those points that we are left with two choices. We learn to love, or we learn to live in hate and bitterness. This is how important love is. It changes us. It has that possibility of changing us. It has that possibility of changing others. It has that possibility of changing the world. And I would put it this way. In a world that so often, even today, dehumanizes, love humanizes. In fact, I would say we need to rehumanize, and love is that way. There was a Swiss theologian. His name is Hans Urs von Balthasar. Now, I don't know if I have that right. So if I got the name wrong, don't miss the quote. And here's what he wrote in one of his more famous books. Love alone is credible. Nothing else can be believed, and nothing else ought to be believed. This is the achievement, the work of faith, to believe that there is such a thing as love and that there is nothing higher or greater than it. Love alone is credible. Or as John wrote in the passage I read a few moments ago, little children, let us love not in word or speech, but in truth and in action. Only love is credible, he writes. The credibility of the faith is built on authentic love. The credibility of Christianity, if you will, is built on authentic love. The credibility of our witness and testimony is built on authentic love. The credibility of a church's witness and its existence is built on authentic love. The credibility of anyone's theology is built on that. The credibility of anything we do, programs, dinners, events, fundraisers, small groups, anything is built on authentic love. Only love is credible. Let us not love in word or speech, but in truth and in action. By the way, what does that action look like? Well, Brian McLaren is an author who wrote a book called The Great Spiritual Migration. And in his book, he talks about how this love looks like. And this is what he has to say. What I believe can't and should happen is that tens of thousands of congregations will become what I call schools or studios of love. Now, I love that. What I care about, he writes, is whether they're teaching people to live a life of love from the heart, for God, for all people, no exceptions, and for all of creation. These churches would aim to take people at every age and ability level and help them become the most loving version of themselves. They would help people face the challenges of life, the challenges that could make them bitter, self-absorbed, callous, or hateful, with openness, courage, and generosity. They would help people recognize when they're strained from the way of love and help them back on the path. And we passionately commit ourselves to make love our highest aim. And we get organized to turn that commitment into reality through practice in a community of practice. In other words, what he is saying is we don't just talk about love. We practice love. And just like anything else you and I need to get better at, we try to figure out ways that we can practice it throughout the week. He talks about three ways: learning to love our neighbors, from family member to friend to distant enemy. We had a great conversation this morning at our 9 a.m. worship. It was myself and Dan and Morris. And anybody else can come, by the way. There's no preaching, so you might get something out of it. But Morris brought up a very good point, and I'm going to talk about Morris in a few moments. It wasn't about history. We were talking about this passage that I read about love, and he says this, that he, and I don't know if you have this conversation with him, Beth, but he talks about the difference between the grand gestures of love and the small acts of love. And we all both sat around and saying, yeah, we know how that feels like, because Morris or I or even Dan, we could say to our significant others, I could say, Linda, I will lay down my life for you. And she'd be like, yeah, that's all good. Could you just empty out the dishwasher? I will, but I will lay down my life for you. It's good. Could you pick your clothes up off the floor? Could you get some milk while you're doing it? You get the idea? It's not always these grand gestures. It's these small acts along the way. That's how you practice love. He got an A+ today, by the way. Oh, is that right? Well, good. Good. That's love. Brian McLaren goes on to say to learn to love ourselves. Work through our issues of self-hatred, self-rejection, shame, even our issues of self-centered conceit. Learn to love the earth and all that is in it. Learn to love that of God and everyone, as Quakers would say. Realize that each experience of love is an experience of God, for love is of God, and those who love are born of God and know God. All right. In his journal, the Quaker writer John Woolman, back in the 1700s, who is known as one of the great abolitionists, starts his journal this way, quote, I have often felt a motion of love to leave some hints in writing of my experience of the goodness of God. I have often felt a motion of love. Now, if you read John Woolman's history, that motion took a long time. It took almost 12 to 15 years, if my math is correct, before Quakers finally began to get it. It's not good to have slaves. It's not good to own people. But John Woolman just kept asking questions. He kept raising the issue. These people are created equal. Should we be doing this? And he kept standing by his principles of not going to homes where slaves were employed. But he all did this because he says, out of this motion of love, he was moved by love, and it moved him to love all of creation. It moved him to love all races, and it started a movement of love. This is what it looks like when only love is credible. To not just do it in speech or in words, or in sermons, but in action. To not only to do it in the great grand gestures, but to do it in the small gestures. To do it in a way that moves from dehumanizing people to finally humanizing people and seeing people as human. I really debated whether to share this last thought or quote. Not quote, but illustration. But I must. Because over the last few weeks, it's really bothered me. And it has to do with the passing of Senator McCain. You know, he passed away late last night. And I remember reading a few weeks ago on social media some people that were so angry at him. And by the way, this is the one thing that's only bipartisan, who were so angry at him, for whatever reason, would post things like, when is this idiot going to die? even one person going as far as to post one of my old friends from another state. Well, my mother said, if you have nothing nice to say, don't say anything at all. So I hope somehow, maybe he rests in peace. Yeah. And that's when this whole act of love became real for me. When I said to myself, this has got to stop. We have got to stop dehumanizing, and we have got to start humanizing. And the only thing that I could think of was this wonderful quote, and it's one that I've chosen for me, by Martin Luther King. I have decided to stick to love. Hate is too great a burden to bear. It is for me. Hate is too great a burden to bear. Dehumanizing is too great a burden to bear, no matter who that person is. Not loving is too great a burden to bear. I have decided to stick to love. That's what Paul said. Stick with love. The greatest of these is love. That's what Peter is saying. The end is near. Pray, welcome, serve, love, because it covers a multitude of missteps in life that you and I will take. The greatest of these is love. That's the only thing that has credibility in life. That's the only thing that has credibility for our life and will speak to people that our faith is real and who we are is real.